The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
We're ready for some football, baby.
It's a Football Friday with the Boss.
I call shot like a boss.
In the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson. I got
that. So interesting, just a couple weeks ago, you may remember Jake Asman here of the Sports Map Radio Network interviewed Joe Namath, and he said, hey, Joe.
Went viral.
He said, Joe, if you were the Jets, would you take Trevor Lawrence number one? And he said, absolutely, he'd take Lawrence, and he'd probably trade Darnold then for a couple of good draft picks, and that would be a way to rebuild the Jets with Trevor Lawrence. So interestingly, in parallel, the Cowboys have been asked a similar question recently.
I know. I think that's fascinating.
Of course, everyone's pushing Jerry Jones for an answer, and he's standing by Dak Holey. But the parallel here with Joe Namath is they asked Troy Aikman, they asked Roger Staubach, what would you guys do? I think everyone was looking for the same quote that Joe Namath gave for the Jets. And both Aikman and Staubach stood behind Dak Holey. They really think the answer is to stick with Dak and use the top draft pick to build a team around Dak. And you, being Dak Prescott's agent, I know you'd be on board with that decision.
I know. You know, my two favorite quarterbacks are Dak and Deshaun. Yes, I'm all about that. And, David, honestly, because you and I get into a lot of discussions about it because you intimately know the Cowboys and their financial situation and their draft situation and all of that, and I'm just looking at it purely from Dak's perspective. And everything I read, and I read all kinds of different sources, says Cowboys should have paid Dak already. I mean, that's just the overriding for all the reasons that I go through every week, not even on the field, just on the field, but off the field as well.
Well, the best news of all is it appears his recovery is going well. There's been no infection that would set him back. And if that's the case, then it looks like a 4 to 6 month cycle to get to return to practice, to get to move around again and work on his three-step drop and start to get his game back in shape for the following season.
And I don't doubt that he will because he has an incredible work ethic. But, you know, other Cowboys little murmurings this week, it's possibly trading Ezekiel Elliott, whose production has been down and who's got a big fat contract. I'd love to get your thoughts on
that. Well, that'd be something they have to consider in the offseason, of course. But I think, yes, they would have to look at that. Tony Pollard has played very, very well for them.
He certainly has.
You need two backs. And
but
Tony Pollard
is a great $90 million back?
No, I mean, Elliott is overpaid for the productivity, and his fumbling has been disastrous. When we come back, we're going to look at college football, though. We're going to look at what we can conclude from the Clemson-Notre Dame game last week. All that when we return on the Boss and the Gloss.
Football Friday with the Boss.
In the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Okay, all the time, people ask me, how does the Gloss know so much about sports? How did Carla get so smart and savvy? And when I tell them the truth, I say one of the things she does is she reads The Athletic.
Every day.
She goes to TheAthletic.com because The Athletic delivers, well, they deliver every sports story that matters. The Athletic has full-time local writers dedicated to your teams, providing breaking news, in-depth analysis, and exclusive stories that you cannot find anywhere else. Plus, they have national names like Robert Mays, Stuart Mandel, Ken Rosenthal, and Lindsey Jones. Who provide unrivaled league-level perspective and insight, all personalized and ad-free. So whether you're looking for a fantasy football edge or a long-term outlook for your NBA team, The Athletic has the sports coverage you need. Subscribe today. It's just $1 a week. Go to theathletic.com/radioweek, and you can get that $1 a week deal. Once again, that's theathletic.com/radioweek. And if you do this, you will know as much about sports as Carla Dawson, which is saying quite a bit.
It is the greatest, I'm telling you. It's like my morning coffee.
All right, you heard it from Carla. Let's talk about the big game last week. It was Notre Dame and Clemson, a matchup of two teams, both down the stretch, going to be in consideration for the CFP. And really, for Notre Dame, it felt like a must win, an important win. They were playing at home, and they had not fared well against elite teams. Notre Dame coming out on top over Clemson, 47-40, and double overtime.
I mean, it was a great matchup, and it's great for college football. And Notre Dame is in the ACC for a one-year experiment, basically.
Love this, yes.
And you know what I love, too, is that Dabo, you know, I would think, oh, he would be like, man, of course it happens this year. He wants them to stay in there because it's good for the conference. But, you know, yeah, it was a 47-40 win in double overtime. And Notre Dame was 0-5 against top five teams in Brian Kelly's 11 seasons, his entire tenure with Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's pretty
until
bleak.
Until last week.
I can't believe he's been there 11 seasons.
I know.
I mean, that just doesn't seem like it's been that long. There was all that turnover that happened at Notre Dame all the time. That's a long run for him. You know, that's great. But to be 0-5 against top five teams, they had to get over that hump.
They did. You know, they were... This is their best ranking right now. They're at number two now in the AP poll since 2012 when they got trounced by Alabama in the national championship game. I mean, it wasn't even close. I think what I do not love about this game, hey, it is what it is, and Notre Dame played a great game. They are undefeated at 7-0. Clemson now falls to 6-1. It's their first loss in 3 years. What is not being talked about, it's the narrative I have a problem with after the game. So this wasn't a blowout, and it easily could have been when you look at Clemson's side of the ball, and Dabo would never make any excuses because that's not who he is, and he says embrace the suck. And what Clemson had was a lot of suck. Not only were they missing their Heisman hopeful in Trevor Lawrence, but Trevor Lawrence is he's playing out of his mind this season. It's not like, oh, yeah, he's picking up where he left off. He is forging on a huge path, I mean, just on an upward trajectory that's incredible. So they're without him, and they have DJ Ungalale, who is doing a great job, but he's, you know.
By the way, I might just say every week you get better and better at pronouncing that
working
name.
Working on it. It's getting talked about more and more. But let's also look at the fact that they were missing three of their front seven on defense. Like, that's not a small task. And they lost two more key defenders in the fourth quarter, which, hey, I'm not making excuses. You've got to play these games. COVID is a real deal. Everyone is dealing with it. But the move of Notre Dame just finally getting this monkey off their back with no reference at all to a depleted Clemson team, it just rubs me the wrong way a little bit. How do you feel?
Well, duly noted, Clemson falls to number four in the rankings. And look, they had to fall given that they lost. Notre Dame jumps up to number two. And I think the rankings are fine, but it is interesting you said that the narrative was this felt like a much bigger win for Notre Dame than it was a big loss for Clemson.
Sure.
It's just not that big of a loss for Clemson. Minor damage. Yeah, they slipped to four.
If the season from 1-4, that's kind of major.
Well, it's a lot of spots, but right now if the season were to end, they'd still end up in the playoffs. So I just think they've got the whole season ahead of them. Lawrence will be back. It's not like he's torn his ACL. He's going to be healthy, and they get to make a great stretch run, and they may well face Notre Dame again in the ACC championship game.
It's just, you know, I say that the AP is they're doing the best they can with this weird season. I mean, I find it funny that Alabama jumps to number one, and they had a bye week. They didn't do anything. All Clemson did was help them out with a loss.
Yep.
And while I do think, yes, Notre Dame has got to pick, they've got to jump Clemson, and I don't have a problem with them being at number two. But I do have a little bit of a problem with Ohio State. They are undefeated. They have played two games.
Right.
Clemson has played seven.
And they beat Rutgers, of all things, right?
And Rutgers is much improved this year, yes.
Sure.
But they beat Rutgers by 20 points. They beat Penn State in their first game out. Penn State is not the powerhouse they have been. They're 0-2. They're getting beat by Indiana. So I would have switched. I would have put Clemson at number three.
Yep.
Because I don't think a two-game undefeated team is the same as a 6-1 team. When you've played seven and you've played two games, That's a difference. So I don't love that. That's giving some Big Ten Ohio State love that doesn't need to be given at the moment.
All right, you're struggling with those top four and how they sort out. But let's go to number five. This is what's gotten me all excited.
Okay.
The Texas Aggies, the A&M Aggies, number five. I can't remember the last time that happened, and certainly not since they've been in the SEC. Kellen Mond and company are playing pretty darn good football. And really, if they could win out, and they just might. If they could win out, they could find themselves in the CFP.
So unfortunately for them, their game versus Tennessee this weekend is postponed until December 12th.
Yep.
So we're not going to get to see what can happen there. But this is the highest ranking in the Jimbo Fisher era for sure. But you're right, that A&M has not been relevant for a long time. They only have one ranked opponent left on their schedule, and that is currently set to be played on December 5th against number 24, Auburn.
Auburn, right.
So they could run the table at this point.
Well, that would be fascinating to
watch.
Good
football.
Yeah, the Tennessee, of course, 2-4, so that probably would have been a win this weekend, and that postponing, well, they'll get to play them later.
And A&M's only loss is to Alabama.
Yeah, quality loss, right?
And their toughest opponent is the fact that they are playing in the SEC West.
Well, right. So they will not get to go. I'm assuming Alabama is representing the SEC West in the SEC championship game. They will not get to be a conference champion.
Correct.
But if you believe that they should be number five now, we all know that of the top four teams, there will be a loss. One of them will lose. Clemson and Notre Dame will likely play
in
the SEC championship game. And so that opens the door for the Aggies to squeeze in to the CFP.
Pretty exciting.
Pretty exciting.
And I know you have to play at least six games to be considered for the CFP. So there is a chance with Ohio State and all that's going on in the Big Ten that they may not even get to six games. I would imagine they would. But you look at, there's been more than 15 games postponed or canceled already in November.
Yeah.
And 50-0 since the start of the season.
So what
COVID's alive and well.
Pac-12 now has their season underway. What did you see out of the Pac-12 at this early moment?
After week one?
Yeah.
What was predicted to happen, happened. You know, the Pac-12 watch list for the top dogs are Oregon. They took care of business. USC, they took care of business. Utah was also expected to be, you know, to contend, and they just might, but their game was postponed. So they are running along as scheduled at this point. Too early to call anything. Oregon looks good. USC looks good. It's early.
Isn't USC the class of the Pac-12? Is that fair to say? Or you see Oregon? How do you shake out those two?
You know, USC has had such a tumultuous past couple of years, especially in the quarterback position with losing JT Daniel.
But they've got one now.
But they've got Keaton Slovis as a true freshman who stepped in last year and is the real deal.
Yep.
I mean, the kid is unflappable and had a couple tough close losses, but I think they're on the right trajectory. I know Clay Helton was edgy whether he's going to keep his job or not. Really glad that USC has given him, they brought in a new AD. They're giving him another chance. I think he's the right man to lead these guys. I think they're going to have, this season will be big for them. They're only going to play seven games, so we're not going to have a real a big body of work, and Oregon's just continuing on under Cristobal, looking really good. They're going to miss Justin Herbert, but they didn't look like they skipped a beat last week.
Well, a Pac-12 team will have to run the table if they want to find their way into the Final Four.
Well, and the Big 12 has allowed that to happen.
Yep.
With having zero undefeated teams. Yep. In the Big 12. So this does open the door for a Pac-12 team that goes undefeated to be able to be in the CFP.
Well, Oklahoma State, of course, has the best record in the Big 12, but I think Oklahoma's going to knock them off, and then that really makes the Big 12 just a mess. There's nobody really who would stand out and be in consideration for the CFP.
They've just beat each other up.
Right,
they really
just beat each other up. All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears. We're going to look at the NBA. This is such
There's some happenings.
Well, it's an interesting offseason because it's so short now, right? I mean, look, the season's going to start on December 22nd. And so we have a very short off season.
Unless you're the Warriors, you've had a real long one.
Well, yes. But we've got NBA draft talk, and we have Russell Westbrook asking to be traded from the Rockets. All that and more when we return on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to Football Friday with the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Okay, are the wiper blades on your car chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see their selection. The professional parts people will help you find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will install your wiper blades free of charge. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, this NBA season, the offseason, is going to be so fascinating because it is short. I mean, we are now...
Got the draft next Wednesday.
Got the draft on Wednesday. Season starts December 22nd. I mean, we're talking about, what, about 5 weeks from now. Everything's got to come down. The free agent movements, trades, draft. Fascinating time.
It's exciting.
And here in Houston, Texas...
We got a problem.
Russell Westbrook says he wants out.
Shocking, said nobody.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, honestly, this is very frustrating to me because I feel like the Rockets have moved. You know, Daryl Morey left because he needed some time off for about 24 hours.
Right.
And then he just took a job with Philadelphia as the GM, as their president of basketball operations. You know, Mike D'Antoni, he didn't even want to grovel for his salary or in his job. He was gone. The writing on the wall was here. Morey saw it. D'Antoni saw it. No way were Russell Westbrook and James Harden going to work together. That's not going to happen. And I knew it coming out of Oklahoma City because Russell Westbrook wants the ball in his hands. And most importantly, he wants to do things his way. He's come into a team who has an MVP caliber, well, not MVP caliber. He is an MVP caliber, MVP star, averaging almost 30 points a game for the past 3 years. He's tired of taking a backseat to Harden. He doesn't want to do that anymore. And the Rockets have gone on the right trajectory. They promoted Raphael Stone from within as the GM, brought in Steven Silas. So impressive. Such a humble, hardworking guy who knows the NBA intimately, can develop players. And these guys are being little divas and saying they want out. They don't like the direction the team is going in.
So with Westbrook, he could say, well, I don't like the direction the team is going in. It may well be that they wanted a different coach.
They wanted Ty Lue.
Okay,
both of them.
There's one issue right there, and that's certainly about the direction of the team. But even prior to that decision, and if it had been Tyronn Lue or anybody else, you have the question of whether Harden and Westbrook can play well together, whether they want to play well together, whether they're a complementary fit on the court. And that goes back to Daryl Morey. I am sure when he was considering bringing Westbrook in, he surely went to James Harden and said, how do you feel about this possibility? And, of course, the two had played together, Harden and Westbrook had played together, in Oklahoma City. So they had intimate knowledge of what it was like to play together. They knew each other. And yet we sit here 2 years later, and we're now finding out it didn't work. What's the mystery?
And $138 million contract later for Westbrook. They're both in their 30s. They're 31 and 32. You bring up a great point with Oklahoma City because you look at this, and Daryl Morey, he is an incredible basketball mind, clearly.
Yep.
You look at Oklahoma City. They had, at one time, on a roster, Kevin Durant, best player in all of basketball.
Yep.
In my opinion, Russell Westbrook, MVP, the guy's going to get his numbers all the time. And you had James Harden, sixth man of the year. Can you imagine that? You had James Harden coming off the bench. And those three together could not, A, win, the big one, and B, coexist. It didn't work. They started peeling off. So why do you think, and then when Westbrook was left by himself there, he couldn't do it. He got his MVP. He got his numbers and his triple-doubles and everything that he needed because he is an ultra-competitor. But let's look what Russell Westbrook doesn't do. He doesn't shoot.
Right.
This is a shooting league. You have got to, you know, that small ball for Golden State has changed the trajectory. And what Mike D'Antoni did with that offense with Steve Nash in Arizona, it's changed how the game is played. Russell Westbrook has not adjusted. He's a terrible shot, especially from 3-point. He is an ultra competitor. And the other thing is his stubbornness. He's going to do exactly what he wants to do, and no coach is going to tell him otherwise. It didn't work in Oklahoma City with two of the best players in the NBA alongside of him, and he being one of them. Three MVPs together did not work. Why in the world would Daryl Morey think that they've got the magic formula here in Houston that can make that work? And then I would add on top of it, I'm really going to let you tell me what you think here. You know, the Rockets continue to give in to James Harden's demands. Now, he is the franchise, but they brought in they let go of Dwight Howard and Kevin McHale because that's what James Harden wanted to do. They brought in CP3. Oh, got rid of him after 2 years because Harden didn't like playing with him. Now we're the same thing with Westbrook. They don't like playing with each other. And Harden doesn't like the instability of the post-D'Antoni Morey era. When are they going to stop giving in to his demands?
Well, at this point, he seems, at least outwardly, to be satisfied to stay, whereas Westbrook is saying, I want out. Do you see any scenario where the Rockets would trade James Harden?
Yes. I don't think it's a likely scenario,
yeah.
And here's what I see. Because, obviously, they're tight up against their cap space, and revenues are going to be down. The cap's going to be lower, so
yep.
That's going to be an issue. When you look at Russell Westbrook, teams looking at him, obviously, he's going to easily be – someone wants to pick him up. I mean, he's got great offensive production, and he's a dynamic, athletic player. But if you really look at what you can get for him, when you see he laid an egg in the playoffs, you know, it was a terrible shot, and he just – what he brings to each team is not a positive. He didn't do it in Oklahoma City. He didn't do it in Houston. So you're not going to get as much for a Russell Westbrook as you would get for a James Harden.
Right.
So to me, it depends on how the Rockets feel. I can't imagine they would give up Harden, but the reason they would trade him is because you are going to get so much more in return than what you would get for a Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, Harden, of course, age 31.
Got
three more years left on contract at max value. One interesting rumor that was out there was that Russell Westbrook would be traded to the Nets and join Kyrie Irving there along with Durant. But what a strange cycle that would be then. Of course, Durant and Westbrook
would be reunited,
and they had that history. And then Kyrie Irving in the backcourt with Westbrook, I just don't see it. Those are two guys who like to have the ball in their hands all the time. That doesn't feel like a fit. Westbrook has to really land in the right place to be a productive piece of the future.
Wherever he lands, he wants the ball in his hands. He wants to be the number one option. And, you know, Kevin Durant got blasted because Russell Westbrook was so vocal about, he didn't call me when he left OKC. Kevin Durant couldn't get out there fast enough. It was like, don't let the door hit me on the way out. I cannot win with this guy.
Yep.
And now we're seeing from another franchise that has a lot of pieces. I mean, Mike D'Antoni is a great coach. James Harden is an MVP as well. They've got PJ Tucker. They have great pieces around them and could not do it. Second round exit to the Lakers. Ugly. Ugly.
All right. The draft is coming up on Wednesday. Always fascinating. And the name it. The top of most mock drafts, LaMelo Ball. Can you believe this? That we might be looking at Ball. I mean, to have two brothers go number one overall. And, of course, the first one really has not performed to that level. Now here comes LaMelo. Where's his dad? I'm waiting to hear from him.
I think the NBA got it right with dad. I think that whatever they did.
They put a muzzle on him.
Congrats, they did.
It's really odd that he was so loud then and so quiet now. Am I missing something?
No, it's a good thing. I think it had to stop because he was taking away the headlines, not only from his son, but at the Lakers at the time.
Yep.
And, you know, things had to change. And, yeah, it's really great that we're not hearing from him.
But LaMelo is atop a lot of people's boards to go number one. I'd be nervous about it.
Oh,
I mean, his time in Australia, he played well.
It was short, though.
It was short. And he's a guy, I think there's concern about his defense and how long it'll take him to adapt to the NBA game. I wonder if there's just an inflation of his value based on the name, based on association, based on Ball. And I just think I'd be darn nervous about taking him number one overall.
Was it LaMelo that had the sunglass stealing incident in China with UCLA?
No, I don't think so. I think it was the third brother.
Okay.
So I think LaMelo's clean on that one.
Okay, good.
Now, Golden State Warriors, I know you follow them very, very closely. They have the number 2 pick overall. And lot of folks think they should trade that for a veteran player who can come in and help in the here and now. But the clock is running. Are they going to make that trade?
They might. They might trade down. Like there's good players at number 8, 9, and 10 in this draft as well. So it'll depend what direction they want in, but they need a big man.
Okay, we'll be right back. We're going to shift gears to the NFL. We're going to look at, has the league become more stratified when you look at all the records? All that and more when we return on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's a Football Friday with the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Okay, every entity has one of those mathematical gurus, those statistics nerds. And ours,
Sports Map Radio Network, is no stranger to that.
No, we've got one. His name's Ron Culver, and he sits behind the glass over there sporting a handsome beard. And Ron has just brought us some interesting statistics all about the NFL, and I guess what has emerged is a season of parity here. You've got, this is an interesting stat. If there are nine games this weekend that if they go the way that Ron thinks they could, you would have 11 teams with a record of 6 wins
that
and 3 losses.
Insane.
11 teams of 6-3.
Starting now, with last night, kicked it off with Thursday Night Football, Titans-Colts.
That's right.
They're both now at 6-3.
Now, look, I mean, a couple things on this list. The Browns would have to beat the Texans, which should happen.
That's no shock. Sorry.
But what will probably not happen is the Jaguars over the Packers. That would be a huge upset. That would put the Packers at 6-3 if they were to fall to the Jaguars. So that one I don't see. But when you look at the NFL, it's sort of interesting because on the one hand, on any given Sunday, any team can beat anybody, and that's just sort of the natural state of the NFL. But on the other hand, it does feel to me like there are some teams this year that are the haves, there are some at the elite, and then just some teams at the bottom that are just miserable. I mean, when you look at the Jets and the Jaguars and the Giants and the Cowboys, or when you look at different divisions, there's a whole division called the NFC East that is miserable. In fact, we might have in the NFC East a division winner who only has about 7 wins. You might have a division winner with a losing record.
I think they may not even get to 7 wins in the NFC East.
I mean, how bleak is that? That's what's so cockeyed about the season. And maybe you can say COVID, maybe a lack of training camps, maybe this and that. But Ron's math suggests that if the games go the right way, there'll be 11 teams with records of 6-3 come Monday.
Well, and let's highlight a few of these teams that could be 6-3 and tell me if you thought this was a possibility at the start of the season. The Las Vegas Raiders, the Miami Dolphins, and the Arizona Cardinals. Would you have picked any of those to be 6-3 at this point of the season?
Hey, you know what? I would have picked the Raiders and the Cardinals. Those two.
Oh, you would have picked the Cardinals.
Yeah, I've actually been optimistic about the Cardinals. I'm really impressed with their play. I mean, Kyler Murray is just electric. He's fun to watch. His ability to run, it reminds me, I don't think there's been that kind of an explosive first step in a quarterback since Michael Vick. I mean, I'm not taking away, Lamar Jackson's an extraordinary runner and his
That
first step and the way that Kyler Murray can just explode out of the pocket when he decides to run is really impressive to me. And of course, Kyler Murray throws a beautiful ball, particularly a deep ball. He has that nice arching.
And look who he's throwing to now.
And he's got some great receivers.
That would be DeAndre Hopkins. That is very
And Larry
very
Fitzgerald.
Nice.
Yep. I mean, this is a good offense that they have assembled, and I really enjoy watching them. They've got a tough matchup this week, so they will, they're coming off their big win over the Seahawks. And
they're only one game out of first place, and they're going to see Buffalo this week.
Yeah, they're right in the mix, but playing Buffalo is a real test, and Buffalo's got a defense that they haven't really faced. That will be a good matchup this week, and that may be one of the best games of the week.
Yeah, I think it is going to be a great game because it is going to be a fight for first place. But, you know, you brought up the lovely NFC East. The game that is, you know, kind of represents everything that's wrong with the NFC East is, you know, Philly at the Giants this weekend.
Yes, yes.
And if the Giants win, listen to this. So We've got 3-4 Eagles versus the 2-7 Giants. If the Giants win, they're a half a game out of first place. And the Eagles are in first place. At 2-7, a half a game. And the Eagles, listen to this one. This is crazy town. Since their Super Bowl win at the hands of Nick Foles, the Eagles are 7-13-1.
Well, they've never been the same team without Nick Foles, have they?
No. No. So what does that tell you? Does that tell you anything about Carson Wentz?
Yeah, that's not a good picture for Carson Wentz. And I think if you were an Eagles fan, or if you're the Eagles franchise, you are worried that the guy you really believed was your franchise quarterback and around whom you were going to build your future does not have the future that you've envisioned. I think they've got a real question mark at Carson Wentz. I also think that what has happened in the last couple of years is that Frank Wright looks like he was a better offensive mind than we gave him credit for. That team has not been the same since his departure. Carson Wentz
and the Colts have been on a great trajectory.
Well, and look what happened. I mean, look at the game he called last night. Mm-hmm. Lots of calls on fourth downs, going for it.
Great special teams.
Spreading the ball around. He is building a real team there. And
resurrecting Phillip Rivers, at least for last night, over 300 yards. It's amazing.
I just wonder whether the shine is off Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz and a little bit more on Frank Reich. And I mean, when you look back, even Nick Foles, with Frank Reich was pretty impressive. I mean, they went on and won a Super Bowl. You can't do any better than that. But Nick Foles is not doing well right now. He is struggling for his team. And I just think you got to look back and give a little bit more credit to Frank Reich. It's something I woke up with this morning thinking about last night's win for the Colts.
Well, you're so right about that. That's a great point. And I just think, you know, at this point in Carson Wentz's career, yes, he has been riddled with injuries, but he was in college too, so this is no surprise. You know, in year four, you've got to be a little bit further along than you are here. You should be developing, and I don't feel like he's developing. I feel like it's going the opposite way. But he's very arrogant about how he is developing and doesn't need to change anything. So if you can't be coached, how can you get better? I don't know. I have trouble with that.
When you brought up the NFC East, I was thinking you were going to bring up the Washington football team. And this is why, because a week ago, I was looking at the NFC East and I made a bold prediction, one with big headlines.
You did.
I thought Washington might just be the team that could win the NFC East. And I thought so in part because Kyle Allen, I thought, maybe was the best starting quarterback in the NFC East this year. But, of course, now Kyle Allen has been injured, and they brought back Alex Smith, and Alex Smith looks like he's not ready. I mean, he threw three picks last week. So, no, I guess I'm going to jump off that Washington football team train. But where do you land if you try to pick anybody else in that division?
Well, gosh. But listen to this. So, the Washington football team at 2-6. If they beat Detroit this weekend, which is not a huge if, the last time the Lions won a division title was 1993, 27 years ago. But with a win, the Washington football team keeps them close to first in the NFC East.
All right. I won't give up
it's
on my
the gift that keeps on giving. So this might be your weekend for the Washington football team. And you know what? I think you should give them a present for Christmas.
What's that?
A name.
Yeah, boy, they need one, don't they?
Get a name. It's not really that hard.
Well, what is hard is not to call them the Redskins, because, of course, we all do it out of habit. But it makes it even harder to avoid calling Redskins when there's no alternative name. I mean, I could at least envision if they were the Lions, then I would have in my head, oh, an image of a lion. That's their team name. But there's no name at all. They're just,
you know, WFT is not good because it's too close to WTF, and that is about what you could say as a WFT
fan for their whole year. That's exactly who they are.
Man.
We are at a point now where every team has played at least 8 games, and we can look at some midseason awards. I'd love to get your thoughts some of the awards that, or the players who are worthy of top consideration. Let me begin. Actually, I want to begin with Coach of the Year halfway through the season. And I do think that the guy who deserves it thus far is Brian Flores. We were talking about this offline. I just think Brian Flores and what he's done with the Dolphins has been very, very impressive. He's got their defense playing well. And the decision to switch from Fitzpatrick, when Fitzpatrick was playing well and the team was winning, to Tua was a very, very tough decision. And look, it's only
he got some criticism.
Yeah, he got some criticism. We were scratching our heads a little bit that it was not an easy choice to make. It was a bet on the future, not the present. But there he did it. And two games in, it looks pretty shrewd. I mean, Tua's first week wasn't particularly stellar. He didn't have a lot of opportunities. He didn't need to do much. But last week, he looked very, very impressive, out-dueling Kyler Murray and the Cardinals.
Well, Brian Flores and the GM in Miami, whose name is escaping me right now, have done an incredible job. I mean, last season when we saw them trading away Minka Fitzpatrick and big key players there, the trade they did with Houston for Laremy Tunsil,
yep,
where they've got first and second round draft picks, they have done brilliantly behind the scenes as well. And they're playing a beautiful, complimentary football. And, I mean, they are one of the teams that, with a win this weekend, could be 6-3.
Yeah.
Wow. They were the laughing stock.
They were not a team that I would have considered going 6-3.
No, the Tannehill-led Dolphins were a disaster.
Well, and they've got the first-round pick and the second-round pick of the Houston Texans, mm-hmm, coming into the draft next year, so they can...
Look like it's going to be a high one.
Yeah, they're going to get a will. It could be a top-five pick from the Texans and then their own pick. So they'll have two first rounds, two second rounds. They have a chance to really build some great pieces around Tua and the future of the Dolphins. One interesting thing... Reading the Boston Globe this week, they had an article that noted, when you look at the AFC East and you envision the future, say the next year, 2-3 years out, and you say, which of the teams or what teams have the best future when you think about draft picks, players coming in, possibilities? And it looks like the Patriots have the least optimistic picture, because the other teams at least – seem to have a franchise quarterback. Josh Allen for the Bills, Tua for the Dolphins, and the Jets on track to get Trevor Lawrence, or if that doesn't work out, Justin Fields. But the Patriots don't have a quarterback of the future. Patriots aren't going to get the same kind of traction. They've got a big rebuild. They don't have any wide receivers. Some of these other teams have very good wide receivers, like Stephon Diggs of the Bills. So when you think about the next 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, for all these teams, boy, the Patriots' outlook in the AFC East is pretty bleak.
It is. Do you think, though, to be fair, and no one really talks about this, do you think, you know, you look at the free agent departures for New England and you also look at the COVID opt-outs? I mean, they basically had,
yep,
like a whole pack, especially on their defense.
On the defensive side.
Yeah, so that leaves a huge void in that roster for New England. You know, and then you couple that with bringing in Cam Newton, who doesn't have the pieces around him that would normally be there. Do you give anything for that? Or?
Well, that is a fair point. That did happen. I guess one of the problems for New England is, yeah, some of those guys who opted out will come back. But that defense was pretty old. It was a mature defense. Mm-hmm. And so when you project, mm-hmm, them out a year, two, or three, you've got an aging New England team without a lot of offensive weapons and a lack of a franchise quarterback. And that's the dark place New England finds. In fact, if New England didn't have a head coach named Bill Belichick, we would be looking at we'd be saying winter is coming. That,
yes,
this is
going to
be a really tough 2-3 year stretch for the New England Patriots.
Yeah. Do you think they keep Cam after this year?
See, I don't think he's their future. I don't think he's going to be the franchise quarterback. I think they've got to go find that guy. And so would he take a caretaker role? I just don't think he's the answer. I haven't seen him pass the ball well enough, consistently well enough. I know he didn't have great weapons there.
I know, so it's hard. To me, it's hard to fairly evaluate him, and he's on the cheap.
Yep.
So if, you know, I don't know. I guess we'll see as the season pans out. We're at the halfway mark.
Well, here it is. He is on the cheap. His contract will end, and then he's going to want to go work. So he'll be a free agent. Will the Patriots be the highest payer, the highest bidder for his services?
They well could be.
They well could be.
Because you look, he really is, I have to say, Cam is struggling. He's got 2 touchdowns and 7 interceptions on the year.
Right. I mean, he's run the ball better than he's passed the ball thus far. And that's not the way that you'd want to build your team. I mean, Jared Stidham, if Stidham were the answer, I think he would have had a chance this year. They're not putting him in because they just don't have a lot of confidence in him. So they're going to have to go and find a quarterback. And that's not easily done. I mean, there are a lot
they
of good.
They have done it before.
Yeah, there are a lot of good quarterbacks coming out in this draft. I mean, even now, when you think about, of course, we all know about Lawrence and Fields, but there are other
Bryce
guys.
Bryce Wilson at BYU.
You bet.
You know,
and Trask out of, I mean, Florida.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, he might well be a guy who will find himself in the top 10, 15 quarterbacks,
yeah,
or
absolutely,
picks this year. will be fun to see. All right. Lastly, before we go to break, I'm going to get your pick for MVP for the first half of the year.
Okay.
We'll come back and do that. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to Football Friday with The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
All right, we have some breaking news. It's sort of intriguing. Give it to us here. Kim Ng
was just named the GM for the Miami Marlins. First female general manager ever in Major League Baseball history. She was the former senior vice president of baseball ops at MLB. She was the highest ranking Asian American in Major League Baseball female. And wow, look at this. Trailblazing. First Kamala, now Kim. You got to have your name with a K. It's good for you.
Next up, the Gloss. You'll be up there soon somewhere. I don't know where, but you're heading up.
Well, my name is Carla, so I'll change it to a K. Yes.
Carla with a K.
Carla with a K.
Oh, dear.
I'm join Kim and Kamala.
Here she goes. Ron, don't give her any ideas.
Well, no, it sounds like they're just forming the new Kardashians.
Well, you know, she's always trying for my job, the boss.
I will make no comment about the booty that could go along with that, but there we go.
Oh, now that's another matter, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ron understands these things.
You do give me a chair without an armrest. Are you telling me something here?
Well, just so that everything will fit. I mean, we want you to have enough space on the chair.
Oh, my gosh. He is outing me here. This is bad.
No, I don't think it's like that. Ron, straighten things out here, would you?
I have no idea what to say.
Well, I know what to say.
I don't want to make the
smart
boss mad.
Man. He's taking
I don't want to make
fifth.
The gloss mad.
All right. I know what to say.
Congratulations to Kim Ng, Marlins general manager.
This hour of the Boston and Gloss on Sports Map Radio has been presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Thanks so much for being with us, the Boston and the Gloss, Sports Map Radio.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.